But the issue with that on my end was anytime someone had a problem, I would be like, rather than explain it to them, I'd be like, oh, you know what? Just leave it with me and then I'll deal with it.
Yeah.
Except I did that time and time again until my schedule was enormous.
Yeah.
And I was taking on so much work.
Yeah.
You couldn't even believe my schedule was incredibly large, right? So that was when my head of department sat me down one day and was like, you know, how are you getting on? Is the work going well and things like that? And I was, yeah, I'm really busy. I had to look at my schedule. And he's like, you need to really learn to delegate your work out and just trust your team a little more. When you come across that really hard shot, you know, everyone has that shot. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The shot when you're sitting on the bus home and you're thinking, how the hell is it going to work?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everyone has that shot. I don't think people realize that that's very, very normal. And everyone has to come across that, you know, baptism of fire, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some people, I feel, take it to heart too much. Mm-hmm. Just relax.
Yeah.
It will get done.
Yeah. It always gets done. Yeah.
It always gets done.
Yeah.
Don't let it hack away your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's we're not saving lives, we're not curing cancer. I feel like I say that all the time.
Mm.
Like, we're not saving lives, we're not curing cancer. It's a film. You know, never in the history of film has a film ever been delayed because one shot couldn't get tracked. That just does not happen. We'll figure it out eventually.
Yeah.
Somehow. You know. So just chill, do what you can if you're running into problems. Yeah. Talk to the lead. That's what the lead's there for, right? The deadline for tracking, because we were at the very beginning, right? Of the entire workflow. We're at the very beginning. So the deadline was really far away.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all kind of like, nah, you know, it'll be fine, right? It's like 2 years. Like, we don't deliver for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fine. We don't really have to worry about that.
Yeah.
And then when I transitioned into lighting at the time, we were in full-blown delivery mode for Endgame. And we were like, you know, you need to render this shot on a Friday. We're going to comp it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know, it's going out the door by the following Thursday. No more retries.
Right.
That was a different kind of pressure. Just be very open to learning, because I also understand that, like, the whole running aspect is a whole nother thing, right?
Where mm-hmm.
people don't really agree or kind of feel like, oh, you know, I just spent 3 years in uni, or I just spent X amount of money at Escape Studios and I feel like I don't need to run, which is a fair thing to say, really. But, you know, running is a great opportunity for you to get your foot through the door. And so if it means to decide on not run and not get your foot through the door, or run and get your foot through the door, I think it'd be a smarter thing to do.
Hi, and welcome to the VFX Artist Podcast. On today's episode, I have my good friend, Mike Pham, who is currently a lighting TD at Frames of London. During today's discussion, I'm looking to find out more about Mike's journey into the industry, as well as to explore more about his transition as a match move artist through to a match move lead at Frame Store, and then finally to transitioning as to the lighting department as a lighting TD. I hope you enjoy the show. So yeah, I've wanted you to be on the show for some time, because I think your journey is one that needs to be told. Also because I think we both follow the same or similar path in terms of work and education as well. So I wanted to explore as well your transition from being a match move lead into the lighting department. So I think there's a lot to talk about. But before we get started, if that's okay with you, could you just tell us who you are and then what you do?
So my name is Mike Pham, and I'm currently a lighting TD at Frame Store. Been there for a while, hitting 10 years soon.
Yeah.
And yeah, as Kofi said, started off as a match move, as a runner, started off as a runner first and foremost.
Yeah.
And then moved into match move and then transitioned into lighting eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, like you said, you've been in the match move department for quite a few years and then you just transitioned. I want to come back to both of them, but just can you tell us a bit more about your journey, like when it began and like how you got your foot in the door, like how did you get in?
So obviously we've known each other for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, 20 years or so since secondary school, right?
Yeah.
Obviously we didn't have the same kind of I guess the opportunities as most people did back then.
Yeah.
Considering the area and the background that we came from. So we never really had much direction. So I just knew that I wanted to do something creative, right? Like academically, I never did very well. So my only escape, so to say, was something creative. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So I picked the most generic courses in college that I could get into, which was obviously Hackney Community College, did the BTech multimedia or something, something like that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, while there, we had an animator come in and talk to us. He was from Framestore at the time, funny enough. And he showed us like a screenshot of like a play blast in Maya with like the grid, like the grid in the viewport and everything. And we were like, oh my God. Like it's I can't remember what he was anime. I think he was anime in W or something. And obviously we were like crazy in class. And and then that's when we were like, okay, yeah, I definitely want to do this. But then, you know, uni and so on and so forth. And that's obviously we went to the same university, same college as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was it wasn't until maybe a little bit further into my career when I really cemented as to what it is I wanted to do in lighting.
Okay.
Because originally I wanted to be a modeler, right?
Okay, yeah.
And I felt like it was great and I was training for it a little bit here and there. I was getting very comfortable in tracking as well, which I started to not quite like when you get a bit comfortable and things weren't really difficult anymore. And, you know, obviously when you get to a lead level, you start to just more like delegate and manage teams and you do like the odd track here and there when it's like problematic and so on and so forth. But yeah. And then that's when I transitioned into lighting when the opportunity arose and said, hey, do you fancy doing lighting? And I was like, never thought much about it. But it's not like locked in place where modeling, you only do modeling and lighting is like a whole ton of other stuff and look dev and, you know, it's a lot more creative than it is technical. So I was like, yeah, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
Trained in it, had an opportunity and just never looked back ever since. It's been great.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't realize you didn't consider lighting. I just thought it's something that you wanted to do aside from match move. So yeah, it's interesting to know.
It was fairly last minute.
It
was fairly last minute. It was more like a secondment where like, do you want to give it a go and kind of train in it and see how you feel? Because I wanted to get out of match move at the time, but I wasn't sure, not wanted to get out of it, but I wanted a little bit different, right? And the opportunity arose and I took it and it was just great. Like, it's been amazing since.
Yeah. Just to go back a little bit further, just how did your transition from uni to Framestore come about? Did you initially have a few other companies that you wanted to work for or had offers for, or what made you was Framestore the one that literally just came first straight after university?
Definitely not. So prior to graduating, I had done a little bit of work in games. And because at the time I really wanted to get into games, it was like the big thing, and I really wanted to get in. And I had a break in the games industry as an environment artist, and that's when I realized, I was like, you know what, maybe this isn't quite for me. And that was in between, I think it was my second and final year in uni. So came back, did uni. In the same summer, I think actually I did a little bit of work experience as a runner at Rush's. I don't think they're around anymore, but I don't know if you remember Rush's.
You remember them, yeah.
Yeah, in Soho. And I thought that was really cool. Yeah. Right. And I got to sit down and like talk with like a VFX supervisor. And yeah, that was when I had like, it kind of piqued my interest at the time. And when we graduated, it was a very things very up in the air, right? Because you know, everyone's graduating, everyone's trying to get into this like super niche industry, and it's all pretty concentrated around like the broader Soho region, right?
Yeah.
And it was very like dog eat dog at the time, I felt. And obviously you were a massive inspiration because all of us lot who were in uni at the time, you was like the year ahead of us. So you broke out into the industry first, and we were like, oh my God, he's already starting. Oh, where was it? Was it Analog or something? It was like another
It was Finished Post Production, which is now
Finished Post Production. Yeah. And then we were like, Kofi's gone clear. Like, Kofi has gone clear. He is like we need, like, he's at the leader. We need to just follow whatever it is. I remember showreels, I'd email you, I'd be like, can you look at my showreel, CVs, so on and so forth, did everything, right?
Yeah.
Sent everything out, had an enormous email. And I remember you sent me a list of companies because I didn't even know who it was I needed to email. And I remember you sent me like an email that had like a list of companies, and it was like hundreds of companies.
Yeah.
I emailed every single one of them.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I emailed them before I researched them.
Right.
Because I was just thirsty. I'll take anything. So as I was emailing along, I was researching the companies, and I eventually I found like a small group of companies, you know, like Rush's, like Framestore, CineSite, Double Negative, MPC, Blue Bolt, and all these other, you know, companies. And then I started my little rotation, right? 1 week I'll email five companies. The second week I'll email the other five companies.
Right.
Third week I'll email the first set of companies again.
Right.
And I did that. I just did that for 3 months straight. Mm-hmm. For 3 months. And eventually I had two interviews at Double Negative, both as a runner. And around the time when, right after my second interview, I got a response from Framestore, from Anna, the recruiter at the time. And she was like, do you want to come in for a chat for a runner position? It's going to be, you know, part-time, but, you know, you can use the time to train. And I was like, yeah, that'd be a great opportunity. Let me come and have a chat. At that time, I hadn't yet made my mind up on DNEG, and I was really adamant on getting into DNEG at the time. Okay. It was like a big joke around, like, people were like, you need to let go.
Right.
And start to broaden your horizon a little bit. But I was like, I really like what DNEG's done. I really like their work and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And I ended up going for Framestore just because the contract felt more flexible. It was more longer and so on and so forth. And yeah, it was great. And yeah, they've really helped me out since then.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't actually realize that you guys were looking at me. Because everyone was thirsty, I guess, coming out of university. But I think, what helped with me was just the work experiences that I did before that. It's interesting to know. What was I going to say? Yeah, I was just wondering, coming to the match move department, what did you like about, did you actually know anything about matchmaking before you got into that position?
Right. So in right after I finished university, only then when we started to go around all the, do you remember they used to have those recruitment shows?
Yeah.
Right. And used to have like a little stool, and it was for Frame Store, then a stool for ILM, and so forth and so forth. And you would do the rounds, you know, every other week or whatever it was, whenever they had a show, we'd go.
Yeah.
I started noticing a pattern that whether a student wanted to be a modeler or anything like that, or an anime or something, more often than none, they always had match move as a skill. And I was like, okay, let me research this, right? Let me see what this is. And I went home and I checked out Match Mover.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if that's still around, but Match Mover came as part of Maya at the time.
Yeah.
Right. Had it, checked it out. I did a first track. It was a terrible, terrible track. It was like a sheet of paper with like dots and like a 3D text, and I tracked it onto the table surface. That was it. And I was like amazed. I was like, oh my god, this looks like it's sticking so well. It was not sticking. I watched it recently, it's terrible.
Yeah.
But I was like, it's incredible. I'm gonna put this on my show reel. I put it in the very beginning of my show reel. And then that's when I started. That's as far as my knowledge of Match Move was concerned, was that one shot, the one time, based on the one YouTube video.
Yeah.
That was it. Cue start running now. And they said, you know, here's a structured way of learning tracking. We had a wiki internally, and you get buddied up with an actual Match Mover. And I thought that was really cool, because I was like, you know, at that point, I'd never really met anyone in the industry where I could like sit down and be like, can you show me this, this, and that? Usually it's always been on Twitter or, you know, emails or something like that. And so, yeah, I sat down, I got partnered up with a Match Mover artist at the time, Diego Pastor. Great guy, taught me everything I know pretty much in tracking at the time, and just started plowing through the training. And I went really, really hard on that training because I wanted to get out of running as soon as possible and get my hands in the work. And that happened. I pretty much only ran for like in total 4 months or so. It was black on white 6 months, but I was on secondment for a month or 6 weeks in between the running period. So that's basically how I learned, mostly on the job. I didn't really know much. Even when they put me on a show, I didn't actually know anything. I just faked it until I made it, because I learned after under pressure. So once I got on a live show, you know, like my first product I ever got on was Iron Man 3. And we had all these burn effects that was like skin tight, and we had to do like facial tracking and things like that. But I had never actually done a body track at the time.
Yeah.
I'd never done it at the time. So they kind of just gave me this thing and was like, you know, here you go. So I started putting the hours and I learned it on the job. So that's basically the extent of my tracking experience, was just, I have no clue what I'm doing most of the time.
Yeah.
Really, I just kind of go with the flow and then learn it, figure it out.
It's quite interesting. It's quite funny, because I remember when I was on my third year, I think, was it like, I don't know if you remember, was it Freddie Gaffney? I think. Anyway, someone tried to teach us Match Move with Match Mover, and it was one of the most the courses that I hated the least. I didn't literally pay attention to. It's just funny how I just came out and then now I'm just like a Match Move artist, because I wasn't interested in it back then. How was your transition through the seniority phases? Because I guess like you start off as a junior Match Move and then mid. How was the transition and what do you think you learned through those phases? As well as looking back through that journey through the eyes of as a lead. What do you think you learned through those stages? Like what? Yeah.
So in terms of transitioning,
yeah,
it was fairly straightforward, to be honest with you. The issue is I have a severe case of imposter syndrome, so I never really think I'm quite good enough to do anything in those circumstances. And it's only once I've finished doing what it is I said I couldn't do I realize I could do it.
Yeah.
And it happens time and time again. So, and it's completely natural. It's completely natural. I know loads of really great artists to this day.
Yeah.
Who they're like, oh, I don't know if I could do it. And I'm like, you know, are you kidding me? Like, you've done all this stuff and now you're telling me you can't do this, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, you start off as a junior. You don't get handed insanely difficult shots straight away. That seems to be a pretty big misconception where when juniors start, they're like, oh my God, I'm going to be given this thing. What if I can't do it? That's like a big thing. What if I can't do it?
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like in other places. And I don't know other people's experiences, but in my experience, when I had trouble, I could always go to my lead. I could always go to a more senior artist and they would always be willing to have time and sit down with me and show, you know, maybe do it this way or that way. And then you'll get this result and so on and so forth. So that happened for about a year or two. And then Pan came along. And the lead at the time, Tom Carter, I was a co-lead with him. He was the actual lead. I was a co-lead. I was meant to kind of shadow him a little bit, which was great. I learned a whole ton from him and the project. From there, I moved on to heaps of other projects after that before I became an actual lead on Kingsman Golden Circle. That was like my first official fully-fledged like lead role on that. And that was a pretty tough project because of time constraints and technical issues. And as you know, things on set not quite reflecting what we receive and so on and so forth. Not that it's anyone's fault, it's just a general thing, you know, just it is what it is.
Yeah.
It's the nature of the job. That took a lot of delegating. You know, I that was the project where I learned to delegate in future projects, because at the time, you know, because the project was not a huge project per se, so there were other projects which were much, much more, well, at the time we figured would be much more difficult. So and we're more tighter time frame. So most of the seniors got handed over to those kind of projects.
Okay.
And I got handed like a medium senior team and they did incredible work. Like they proper smashed it. The work was really hard. I think it was really, really downplayed on how hard the work was. Mm-hmm. And even the juniors on the team at the time did amazing. Like they really smashed it, man. Like, you know, you can imagine anamorphic 35mm squeeze zoom car chasing, is, you know, you name it, it had it. But the issue with that on my end was anytime someone had a problem, I would be like, rather than explain it to them, I'd be like, oh, you know what, just leave it with me and then I'll deal with it. Except I did that time and time again until my schedule was enormous. And I was taking on so much work. You couldn't even believe my schedule was incredibly large, right? So that was when my head of department sat me down one day and was like, you know, how are you getting on? Is the work going well and things like that? And I was, I'm really busy. I had a look at my schedule. And he's like, you need to really learn to delegate your work out and just trust your team a little more.
Yeah.
And it's not that I didn't trust my team. It's just that rather than explain it, I could literally figure, I'll just do it now and it'll be done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So anyway, we delivered that. Everything went well. Then I got like, then I peaked after that. I didn't lead anything for a little while, I think, because nothing came through that required it. Then I peaked and I led Infinity War. So that was like the peak for me in my leadership role. And that was the one where I like really sat down. I took over the schedule myself. I did all the bidding myself and I handed the work out and I delegated and minimized weekend work and late night work. So that went quite well.
Funny you answered my question, because I was going to ask you how it felt leading a team and what other people would say about you as a lead, as a manager of a lead?
I mean, I hope it was good.
Yeah.
I mean, a few of the guys that were on my team were people, were the guys that I trained as runners, because when you got to a certain level, you would then start training runners yourself, right? And I trained quite a few runners in my time. You know, some people I still work with today who are now even in lighting, who had gone through the track and gone into lighting with me, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I did anything outrageously bad
to anyone
about myself, besides just continuing taking on work that shouldn't be taken on myself, really.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, as a lead, as a match move lead, what would you say are the common mistakes that artists tend to produce on match move shots? I mean, I guess that's quite a generic question.
That's really short. Do you know what it is? I'll tell you one thing that I noticed, right? Is I think when you come across that really hard shot, you know, everyone has that shot. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The shot when you're sitting on the bus home and you're thinking, how the hell is it going to work?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everyone has that shot. I don't think people realize that that's very, very normal. And everyone has to come across that, you know, baptism of fire, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some people, I feel, take it to heart too much. Mm-hmm. Just relax.
Yeah.
It will get done.
I don't know how. It always gets done. Yeah.
It always gets done.
Yeah.
Don't let it hack away your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, we're not saving lives. We're not curing cancer. I feel like I say that all the time.
Mm.
Like, we're not saving lives. We're not curing cancer. It's a film. You know, never in the history of film has a film ever been delayed because one shot couldn't get tracked. That just does not happen. We'll figure it out eventually.
Yeah.
Somehow. You know. So just chill, do what you can if you're running into problems. Talk to the lead. That's what the lead's there for, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the biggest advice, I feel.
Mm. Yeah, sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, that still happens to me every now and then. Like, there's always that shot. And then...
Oh, yeah. I am a massive hypocrite. Like, it happens to me all the time.
Yeah. You know?
It happens to everyone. It happens in everyone, you know? So,
What would you look out for in match move reels, or what could you recommend for any match move juniors or runners looking to get into that department?
I'd say like don't try to be too flashy. I think I noticed that a few times with match move reels where they try to do like, they'll track like a robot in the scene, you know, and the robot looks amazing, man. The modeling's incredible. You know, the texturing's great. Look dev is great. The lighting is matching the back, you know, the background is great. But, and then, you know, they'll add like wireframe cones, you know, make sure it sticks, but it's almost a nodal camera.
Right. Okay.
You know,
and
you're like, that doesn't really portray, you know, I understand that you grasp the concept of laying points down, but that's like half the work, right? The other half is figuring it out.
Yeah.
Like, I'd much rather see nothing comped. I would personally much rather see wireframe cones, but the camera is doing some really complex work, you know, zooms and loads of pans and, you know, things like that, like fast paced stuff and rolling shutter, like that stuff would impress me more, you know? And obviously you always have like a variety, right? You have your camera track, you have your object track, and you have your body track. Realistically, there's not much else you need, realistically. If you have one really good camera track, maybe you could couple it with a body track in the same shot and an object track. I think you're great. You'd be doing fine. You know, you'd be much further ahead than most people if you have some work that's quite complicated to solve. And, you know, when a shot's quite difficult, usually an experienced match mover would be able to see that, you know, wow, this, you know, if I was to approach this, I would have some trouble doing it, you know.
Yeah, so, sure, yeah. 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 So just thinking back, what's the ratio between camera and rotomation and object tracking that you were responsible for at a big studio like Framestore, and how has the ratios changed over time? I'm just asking that because, like, I'm trying to gauge demand for specific tasks due to the increase of like episodics and the quality for film and episodics in general. So yeah, I'm just wondering what's the demand? What's the demand from clients lately? Is it like more object tracking or more automation? Or I mean, I guess everything needs a camera. So
yeah.
What do you tend to do the most, as well as comparing how to when you started?
I'd say, I mean, I don't know about episodic because I haven't I have tracked something episodic before, but it wasn't much. I'm going to say, like, at Framestore, when I started, I think you had your very, very clear sides of people, where you had the one side who were very, very dominant in the body tracking realm or the raw emission realm. And so more often than none, they would be handed the hardest, worst, most complicated body tracking shots. And then you had yours that were very good at camera tracking. And as I transitioned up in the levels over the years, like we started to really blend that really well. So now I feel like the norm in the industry now is if you're a senior tracker, you're basically senior in all aspects of tracking, all aspects.
Yeah.
You might lean more towards cameras. Like I personally lean more towards really complicated cameras.
Mm-hmm.
I can body track, and I've done really hard tracks. But when it comes to stuff like, as you know, like even stuff that, you know, you've had, you know, issues with, freelance wise and things like that, you know, I lean more towards really complicated cameras that have really weird quirks, you know, like mm-hmm. diopters and zooms and all mm-hmm. kinds of nonsense that they do on set, you know, underwater and things like that. Like I've done it all, you know, so I tend to lean towards that. But yeah, I think nowadays it's very different. Back then I felt like they used to have people that were good in one side and people that were good in the other side, but now we're really merging it all across the board now.
Yeah, okay.
With regards to demand, that's quite hard to say because I've been out of tracking for quite some time now. But you know, with the pandemic, I'd say it's more or less set extensions, crowd extensions, things like that. I'd say that it's mostly that stuff now.
Yeah, okay. I'd add to say that because you've not spent much time in episodics. In episodics, there's a lot of demand for like body tracks and rotation and object tracking. There's a lot of it for some reason. Which is random especially because there's a lot of shots in episodics. It's just insane. There's a lot of it. Let's talk a bit about your switch to the lighting department. Like when did it begin? And yeah, I mean, I think you've already mentioned why you decided to switch to that department. Mm. But how was the switch, and how do you feel being in that new department?
So in terms of time scale, I believe I began training while I was still leading Infinity War. Mm-hmm. So I was doing a little bit of both at the time. And I got seconded on a show as a lighter while also still leading and running dailies and doing reviews as lead in Infinity War in tracking. And that like the transition was slow because they couldn't let me go instantly due to, you know, handing over a replacement like that in the middle of a lead show would be impossible, right? That's just not the right thing to do, which I entirely agree with. But yeah, one day I just got a call. It was like Christmas time, 2018. And they were like, you're going to go on Christmas break as a tracker, and January 2019, you come back, you're going to be a liar.
Right.
That was a transition. That was it. And all my training basically could have been condensed in like the space of 2 weeks. And yeah, like I knew what I was in for, and but it did say, you're gonna hit the ground running. Which I'm fine with. As I said, like I work really well under pressure. That's the only way I really learn. Got in there, started my first show was Endgame. And to be honest with you, on Endgame at the time, most of the stuff was already set up. So it was just a period for me to get to grips with all the tools and, you know, the workflow and pipeline and this trove of information that was being thrown at me. Like it's so complicated, you know, in terms of lighting. But the technicalities of it, I had down from being at Frame So and, you know, tracking for so long. So yeah, it was all the lighting stuff that I had to learn at the time. Because when they asked if you wanted to do it, I was like, yeah. Because I no longer wanted to do modeling anymore at the time. So I wanted to find something new that was more creative but was technical at the same time. Because I'm very technical when it comes to that kind of stuff. So yeah. Don't regret it one bit. It's been the greatest decision I've ever done.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Do you think that the pull to lighting could have been influenced as well from being, I mean, partly because I know you do a lot of photography as well. So, I mean, for me, I also wanted to explore lighting if I was not to be doing match move. But my reason for that was because I enjoy taking photos and I love understanding lighting for photography, especially when you shoot film. Like you have to really understand lighting and know how to expose and stuff. So that's why I want to get into lighting. But do you think that could have influenced your pull towards it, or was it just literally not?
No, it definitely influenced it. 100%. 100%. Even when I had a chat with the departments and things like that, you know, yeah, I was like, yeah, I have a very, very keen eye for photography. As you know, we do it all the time.
Yeah,
we shoot stuff all the time. We've done it for years, and it definitely helps. You know, when it comes to beauty lighting, something like, for instance, that's full CG. You know, like it's entirely different to match a plate. You know, with a plate, you have to have a really good eye for detail and kind of understand what it is you're picking out and how to match it in certain way. You know, do you need one light or do you need like a group of lights, you know, temperature, and do you need a gobo and textures and things like that? Mm-hmm. But once you're doing a full CG lighting where you have no reference, that's the point when my eye in photography really comes into play. And it really helps because I wouldn't even know how I would approach something if I didn't do photography. Yeah. If I was doing something full CG, I actually wouldn't know how to approach it. I would have to look at a whole ton of references and kind of pick what kind of lighting I feel would work best in the scene, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, yeah. So, what pressures came with being in that department? Because like you said, you have to keep, like you have to hit the ground running. So I'm just wondering, you came from Matchmove as a lead where you knew everything, you knew what to do, and you were very comfortable. I mean, like you were very confident, I mean, in that department. So I guess being in a new department, you, as well as the pressure, your, maybe like your confidence or your efficiency and skills would have been different. So how did you manage that?
I don't know. I really don't know. And it, like, I can explain it. Like, it was a very different world in the sense that in the sense that, like, the deadline for tracking, because we were at the very beginning, right, of the entire workflow, we're at the very beginning, so the deadline was really far away. So we were all kind of like, nah, you know, yeah, it'll be fine, right? It's like 2 years, like, we don't deliver for about 2 years, you know, it's fine. We don't really have to worry about that.
Yeah.
And then when I transitioned into lighting at the time, we were in full-blown delivery mode for Endgame. And we were like, you know, you need to render this shot on a Friday. We're going to comp it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know, it's going out the door by the following Thursday. No more retries.
Right.
That was a different kind of pressure. Like, the render had to work that day, you know? That's the kind of pressure that I never felt in the past to that extent. I felt that kind of pressure before, but it was very, the deadlines were always very distant.
Yeah.
So I never took it to heart. But in lighting, it's very, very different, you know? That pressure was very overwhelming. And, you know, that was also coupled in with the fact that obviously the way we do things are very proprietary at Framestore. So you couldn't just simply Google something, you know, that didn't really work, right? Everyone, all the answers to your questions were sat in the room with you. You just had to know who to ask and how to ask it. So that's when I fell down the rabbit hole of, like, going into the wiki internally and reading the documentation and the shaders and the lighting and just this myriad of information that was just being fed, and I had to then somehow implement that as fast as possible in, because obviously I didn't really get brought into lighting as, like, an absolute junior, because the way they saw it was, you know, I'd been in a company for a while now, and I know what tools do what.
Okay.
So I was really
extra pressure.
I was really expected to just be like, okay, here's your seat, you know, let's do this. But it went fine. It was a bumpy road at first, but thankfully all the leads in lighting are amazing, man. I could not thank them enough. Like, honestly, they are incredible guys, man. They helped me out so much. They taught me everything. You know? They're super, super patient, even when pressure's really, really high, as you can imagine. They always stop what they were doing. They were like, all right, let me come to your desk, sit down with you, let me see what you've done, then I'll show you what you've done wrong and how to avoid it and fix it. So, like, great guys, man. Like, massive help.
Yeah, I think it makes a big difference in any department. Like, when you have, like, people that are patient enough to, like, to be able to, like, be there even when there's so much pressure going on. And, like, because there's, like, I remember when I was a junior, I always had questions, and at some point you ask so many questions that you feel like, oh, you're disturbing people, you don't feel like asking them anymore. But it just makes so much difference when people are so available, like, make themselves available, and especially in your situation where you were expected to be, like, churning stuff out, especially towards the end. So yeah, I can relate, I can understand that. So do you see yourself transitioning into any other departments in the coming years, or do you think lighting would be the set one for now?
That's quite hard to say, because you know, in relative terms, I'm quite new in the game in lighting. I just happened to be put in slightly rougher than average shows where I've had to learn fast and kind of do stuff up, right? But no, I'm honestly really enjoying where I am at the moment. I get the right amount of technical challenges and the right amount of creative challenges. Like, I feel like this is my balance.
Okay.
For myself. I'm completely at peace with where I'm at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. What advice would you give to anyone aspiring or wanting to follow your footsteps?
That's a great question. I mean, that's going to boil back down to the whole university. Like, do I go to university or not?
Right. Okay.
Thing, right? Like, that's always been a big contender because of,
yeah,
you know, like as our, like our circle, right? Like, you know, myself and and yourself and all the arts that we know.
Yeah.
Like, we tend to say we graduated from the University of YouTube. Right.
Yeah.
Because that was very real. Like, we genuinely graduated, you know, not to say the university didn't do anything, they did, but most of the work that we did, we had to YouTube in our own time, and
yeah,
we genuinely graduated from University of YouTube. So I'd say in terms of university, it really depends on your own circumstance and, you know, how you want to make the decision. For me personally, I think it was great. It was a great buffer period for me to find myself and figure out what it is I actually wanted to do and really boil it down. So it was great for me. And I need structure. If I don't have structure, I'm just all over the place as well. So that also is, you know, a big problem. So,
yeah.
But yeah, what to do? I'd say just be like very, very consistent and be very, very persistent, because that's one thing that the recruiter that hired me to Frameside at the time said, was that eventually, like, she just knew my name in the emails because of how often I was emailing and how, you know, how consistent I was. You know, I wasn't like pestering, like, it wasn't every hour, but I would send an email and maybe I would catch her somewhere, like a show somewhere for recruiting students and things like that. And she would instantly recognize my name and put a name to the face, you know? So it was more like that. And yeah, just be very open to learning, because I also understand that, like, the whole running aspect is a whole nother thing, right?
Where
people don't really agree or kind of feel like, oh, you know, I just spent 3 years in uni, or I just spent X amount of money at Escape Studios and I feel like I don't need to run, which is a fair thing to say, really, but, you know, running is a great opportunity for you to get your foot through the door. And so if it means to decide on not run and not get your foot through the door, or run and get your foot through the door, I think it'd be a smarter thing to do that. And also, even as far as the running job is concerned, it's a great way to meet people. You know, you talk to people all the time. I met a lot of people who even now I work with closely, whereas I was a runner at the time, you know, setting up meetings and carrying boxes and doing whatever stuff, you know, but now I work very closely with them. Like, it's great. Like, you know, I personally think it's a good way to get your foot in the door. Yeah. So don't, you know, excuse it.
No. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Cool, man. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. It's an incredible journey, I think. Yeah. It's quite inspirational, because usually people tend to stay in the same department. But I guess you realize that you hit your peak, and I guess the reason why you chose to switch your department was because you wanted to learn and progress, like, keep expanding your skills. So yeah, I think it's great and something that people should do as well. But yeah, I think maybe one off question that just came off my head was, do you think at some point one needs to leave, because you, let's say for example, you spent maybe a decade at Framestore, do you think you need to, maybe not necessarily directly to you, but just generally, do you think people need to necessarily maybe leave where they've been working for a certain amount of years and maybe work somewhere else just to validate their skills, or do you think it's not really necessary?
I think it entirely depends on the individual, man. Like, if you feel like you've fulfilled what it is you were trying to learn, and you want new experiences, and you know, job security aside and, you know, how the whole industry works, you know,
mm-hmm.
by all means, do it, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you feel like, you know, if you feel like, oh, maybe I've got a lot more to learn, and, you know, I've been here for so long, this is a bit of a safety net, I can use my time here to learn where it is I want to learn.
Yeah.
Then you can stay. I don't think it's a big deal. You know, there's a lot of people who have worked at companies even longer than I have and then ended up leaving India anyway just because they wanted something different.
Yeah.
For myself, I think eventually I will. That entirely depends on the circumstances. But yeah, like once I feel like the similar feeling I had like when I was in Matchmove, where I'm starting to get that, you know, getting too comfortable.
Yeah, okay.
You know, feeling very content.
Yeah.
Then yeah. We'll see how it goes, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's a valid answer, I think. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, man, cool. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing. I think it's great.
That's fine, man. It's been a great journey, to be honest.
Yeah, it's incredible. Incredible. Just can't believe it's been a decade already.
almost a decade. A decade.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It just flown by, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's mad.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Cool, man. Cool. That's awesome. Yeah, man. Yeah, it's really cool. It's really nice. Yeah, like. Yeah.
You know what? I could only say I wish that we, like, wonder what it was like if we were to start earlier. Because I saw the last podcast that you did with Ty. Is it Ty?
Yeah, the guy.
18 years old. It's insane.
Yeah. It does that all of that in Blender as well.
I didn't know what the hell it is I wanted to do when I was 18.
Yeah. I wanted to get into games as well, because video games was what I wanted to do, which is why I got into the animation course.
Yeah.
But then I realized I didn't really enjoy video games, and then I didn't enjoy animation. But it was only when we had the industry day at Ravensbourne on the second year, that's when I found out about VFX. That's what changed my direction.
For me it was like meeting some friends at uni, and they were on a post-production course, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool, you know. Yeah. Comp, you know, mystical side of the whole thing. They really convinced me and like swerved me in the other direction. Been really grateful ever since for that. The thought of like already being so deep in the role at 18, you know, I couldn't even tell my parents like what it is at that age. They don't even know what I do now. You know, my dad just says, oh, he does Disney. What does that mean? You know, when he calls home to Vietnam, he's just like, so he's still doing Disney. He doesn't know what it is that I do, right? And even trying to explain to him what I did back then or what it is I wanted to get into, he was really worried, and rightfully so. You know, he wasn't sure like whether I was just gonna literally play games all day long. It's a very, very confusing thing for them. Like, they don't understand what it is I do, and they also don't understand how the hell it is that I managed to make money. It's just, you know, it's not like, you know, because it's an ethnic background, like they really think like, you know, if you're not doing something with your hands, you know, like physically holding something in your hand, you know, then it's not anything, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, to this day, I still can't really explain it. I just do what I do, and that's what I say. So,
yeah.
Because I do Disney, then, you know, I do Disney. It is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually going to ask you, I was going to ask you that question for the podcast, but I thought, nah, maybe it's not really, relevant.
I think as you know, people from ethnic minority backgrounds and stuff, like it is a very important thing to bring forth, because some of the things that we, you know, like our culture that we grew up in, you know, whether it's African or Asian or so on and so forth, like our parents are very like ingrained in the whole, like, you know, you can either be a doctor or an accountant, you know, or a lawyer and so on and so forth. But sometimes I just couldn't do that. Like, it's just not for me to do something like that. Like, I knew already, I was like, that's just a far-fetched dream. Me, a doctor? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I would have blood on my hands for all the wrong reasons. Absolutely not. But yeah, that like, I think, and he was worried, like, up until a certain point. Like, when I finished uni, I couldn't get work. It was 3 months of just emailing. And I was always like, Dad, don't worry, you know.
Yeah.
No, this thing will happen. Then I got a runner's job, and then he was like, "Oh, okay, oh, you know, you finally made it. What are you doing?" And I told him what I did, and he was like, "So you went to uni, and now you're doing that?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Yeah, yeah, but I need to get my foot in the door, right? This is how I get experience."
Yeah.
You know, he even told me, like, during my interview, he was like, "Oh, make sure you wear a suit." Because in his, you know, you kind of get that idea, you know, like, I'm like, "I don't need to wear a suit, like, you know." If anything, I might not get a job because I'm wearing a suit. I'm not going to wear a suit, Dad. I'm going to wear casual, a button shirt. That's it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of his, like, thought process. But yeah, hopefully, like, I think now he kind of grasps that, okay, this is like an actual career path. It's actually a thing. And what really cemented it back then was going back home to Vietnam in 2017 and, you know, meeting some of my family members and my nieces and my cousins and so on that I hadn't met in a really long time, long before I was in the industry, and they were asking what it is that I did, and I'd just be like, "Oh, you see that poster up there? Yeah, you know, that's what I did.
Yeah,
you know, and that poster too, and that poster too." And I, you know, they'd be like, "Oh, you know, you know," that's when they were like, "Oh yeah, Michael's, you know, kind of this and that.
Yeah.
So that's when he's like, "Okay, maybe it is an actual job. Maybe he's not just clowning around in an office, like, somewhere in this obscure building in Soho." You know?
Yeah.
Nah, I think it's a very important thing to have a conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
When it comes to things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.